How are you guys doing?
This is Zach.
And Stuart.
And this is the Back Row Super Show, the main show.
Yep.
Today we are going to be talking about a kind of problematic episode. I think Stuart and I were talking before we were recording, and I think the best way for us to cover this would probably be to insert a warning here that we are talking about Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
It's a problematic movie.
It's got some topics that are rough to talk about.
Yeah, and Roman Polanski is a very controversial person.
Yeah.
Just look into his history if you don't know who he is.
Do a Google search.
Yeah, just a brief Wikipedia search is
enough to uncover stuff.
But this week, we'll be putting out two episodes. So if you don't want to listen to this one, but you would still like to listen to us, you'll have another avenue for that.
Yeah.
Because there are certain subjects with this movie that we can't just, talk around, because they're
main factors of the movie.
Yeah,
it's a theme of the movie.
Yeah.
if this isn't your cup of tea, because normally what we try to do is stay positive, and we try to talk about, light and happy subjects, though we have dived into a couple of more serious things. This one is definitely going to be problematic, like you said. So.
Yeah.
So we'll have two episodes up. If you don't want to listen to this episode, check out our other one.
Yeah. I don't know which one that will be yet, but I'm sure it'll be a good one. We'll put our best foot forward and stay positive.
That's so, right. It won't be a dumpster fire.
It will not. So without any further ado, if you're still tuned in, we'll be talking about Rosemary's Baby, or The Year is One.
The Year is One. This is why I've dressed up in a onesie and I've got my bonnet on.
You do have that bonnet on.
Yeah.
It's a very pretty bonnet.
Thank you, because I'm a very pretty Satan baby. God.
I guess first we can go into some history.
Yeah. Let's talk about Roman Polanski.
Yeah. So Roman Polanski was actually brought onto this movie via his connections at Paramount.
Yeah.
So this movie came out in 1968, kind of right before his career was really at the high point that it would become.
Mm-hmm.
Budget was $3 million, box office was $34 million, which doesn't, that number doesn't sound very high, but it's also 60 years ago.
Yeah, so, I don't think it takes in for inflation. And
yeah, that's not for adjusted for inflation, but it brought in, over 11 times what it cost to make.
Yeah, and I was surprised with just the, the topic and everything, that people would go and see this movie.
Yeah, well, so, in that span of time, there was a kind of a, because The Exorcist came out, I think, in 71.
Mm-hmm.
The Omen came out somewhere in that early 70s period. So, there was a time when there was, this huge, fear of the occult, Satan, and all of that. And this movie is actually based on a book by a guy named Ira Levin.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he wrote The Stepford Wives and Boys from Brazil. Those are two other books that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wrote a sequel to this book. He released it in the mid-90s, and it's set in the same time period, in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues with chronology, time frames, where things work out. He didn't, I don't think, re-look at his notes from when he was writing this
So he probably didn't, plan for a sequel. He probably saw the popularity in the movie.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, time to monetize this.
Yeah. Well, and surprisingly, given that there's a female character in a central role, Rotten Tomatoes has the scored as a 99%.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a 99%. It's also preserved in the National Film Registry by Library of Congress.
I did not know that.
They do that for things that are culturally significant.
Yeah.
Good or bad. If it has an impact on the current culture, they add that to their film
record. Yes, and I will state that I hadn't seen this movie until I watched it a couple of weeks with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, in prep for this episode.
Yeah.
I had heard about the movie. I actually confused it with The Omen, I believe.
Yeah, I think you because did. You were talking about, like, yeah.
The remake.
Yeah, the remake, and I was like, the one with Zoe Saldana on Fox?
I was like, no, no. So, yeah, I actually confused it with The Omen because I had seen The Omen. But yes, I had never seen this movie nor the remake, so I came in with fresh eyes, and yeah, it really made me feel uncomfortable at
yeah,
times.
Like, it's a very well-done movie,
yeah.
Despite Roman Polanski being involved in it. He, like I said at the top, just do a brief Wikipedia search. I'm not sure 100% of the timeline. He was married to Sharon Tate, so he was, I think, on a film shoot when the Tate-LaBianca murders with Charles Manson happened. So he has that in his history, which isn't necessarily a problematic thing for him, but he also absconded to Paris sometime in the early 70s, I believe.
Yeah.
Because Paris does not extradite, and he was wanted for, I believe, drugging and assaulting a 13-year-old.
Yeah. There was issues with him and underage women.
Yeah.
I
think he was recently apprehended by police.
I did not know
in
that.
America. I think it was a connecting flight, and the country did extradite. So. So back to the history of this. This movie was actually bought, the book rights were purchased to make a movie from by a guy named William Castle.
Yeah.
He was known for kind of the schlocky horror in the 50s and 60s. Put out House on Haunted Hill, and there's a scene in that movie where he would have theaters rigged with, like, gimmicky things. Like,
yeah.
There's a skeleton that he rigged up in the back of the theater to come zooming towards the screen at an opportune moment to scare the crap out of the crowd.
Yeah.
He put out the Tingler, where he ran an electrical current through the seats.
Seats where it would shock you a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, these were all things that were, like, kind of like 3D was, but 3D stuck around.
I believe it's called 4D.
Where, oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, where the chairs move.
Move around, yeah. And it's kind of, it's hard to imagine nowadays, like, trying to go to each theater and get them to do that.
Oh, it's a big problem.
Yeah.
We'll talk about a movie in a while that required theaters to put in a different speaker system and how costly that was to actually do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool concept, and yeah, if maybe you have your film showing in, like, two theaters.
Yeah, that might not be a problem.
But yeah, if you want to make an international or just a national movie, that's probably going to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah, but so yeah, William Castle brought the book to a guy named Robert Evans. He's kind of a huge industry figure. He's responsible for, he was the head of Paramount at the time. And back then the studio systems used to work a lot like production companies do today. So being the head of Paramount would be like being in charge, like J.J. Abrams being in charge of Bad Robot.
Yeah.
So Evans is also responsible for the Godfather movies. He's a well-known producer from around this time period. His movies are probably one of the reasons why the film code changed from the Hays Code to the MPAA terms of rating, because the Hays Code was just this draconian system of, like, you can't show characters drinking, you can't have them kissing on screen for more than 3 seconds at a time.
Yeah.
It's a holdover from the 20s.
Yeah.
William Castle brought the book to Robert Evans before it was published and convinced him to buy the rights. Evans agreed on one condition, that they would put out the movie. He would keep William Castle as a producer and give him a cut of the box office, as long as he did not direct it, because Castle was known for gimmicky bullshit, and this movie is not the right tone for gimmicky bullshit.
Yeah, if this movie had that sort of, like, you know, skeleton popping out of a closet, or, like, a jump scare here or there, I do think it would take away from the tone of the movie.
Yeah,
and it would really be a detriment to the movie.
Yeah, he is not a director that's good with a lot of nuance or subtlety.
Yeah, which there is plenty in this movie.
Yeah, there is a lot.
Yeah.
But Castle actually makes a cameo in the movie. He is the man when Rosemary is in the phone booth. He's the guy with the cigar that's, like, waiting outside the phone booth.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. You can kind of see the guy who's responsible for Paramount making this movie.
Well, there you go.
Polanski was actually put on this movie by Robert Evans to write and direct, rather than another movie called Downhill Racer that he was actually hired for. So he, like, at the last minute was just like, you're European, and you handle subtlety very well. I'm going to put you on this movie instead of a movie called... I've never heard of Downhill Racer.
Neither have I.
Researching this.
Yeah.
Mia Farrow was cast to be in this movie. She was actually married to Frank Sinatra at the time.
Yeah.
and it infuriated Sinatra to no extent that she was in this movie, because when they got married, one of their agreements was that she was not to work while they were married.
Yeah, which is a weird agreement, but...
Yeah, he went so far as to have her served with divorce papers on the set.
Yeah, that's a dick move right there.
Yeah, yeah, and Polanski and Evans were only able to get her to stay in the movie by showing her a one-hour cut of the film, so they had enough footage to assemble a one-hour cut.
Yeah.
Which shows you how far along this movie is, because it's not very long.
Yeah, it's the runtime's about an hour and 20.
I think it's more like an hour and a half-ish. Okay. It moves by very briskly, though.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, her husband in the movie, Guy, is the... His name is Guy. I think that was a more common name at the time. I'm not just calling him Guy. Robert Redford and Jack Nicholson were both offered the role, but they turned it down because they didn't see this movie doing well, given the social climbs.
Yeah, and I would probably be in that same situation. Like, if I was offered a...
Yeah, because you've done acting before. If someone came to you with some very controversial topic, like, if you're on the rise, I can see someone, like, not taking a film.
Because those are the type of films that can, like, sink your career.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the people from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't really gotten any roles...
Yeah, I mean, Linda Blair was typecast. Especially horror tends to do it. Like, Linda Blair was typecast. Max von Sydow did okay, but yeah, like, I can't,
Yeah, so you really have to think about these things, because, you know, it is a position, and if you are a rising star, you definitely want publicity and your name out there.
But, yeah, absolutely.
But being that it's so controversial and kind of a horror flick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and for that very reason, Polanski actually cast John Cassavetes in the role.
Mm-hmm.
Cassavetes is kind of an auteur director. He has done some acting. And I think he's very good in this movie.
But yeah.
I think it's very telling that the person cast in this controversial role is someone who's a director and not an actor, primarily.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, shooting the space, the Dakota in New York was actually used for exterior shots only. There's a rumor that they used the insides, but that's not true.
Hmm.
They only were allowed to shoot in the coachman's turnaround.
Yeah, which outside. Is, at the beginning of the movie, you'll see most of the exterior shots.
Yeah,
because it's a beautiful hotel.
It's a beautiful old hotel. Yeah. It's still in operation. You have to be approved by the board of directors at the hotel to get in.
To get just a room?
And it's made up of people who live there.
Oh, it's not an actual hotel, is it?
No, it's not a hotel at all. It's an apartment building.
Oh, okay.
But it's one of those apartments where you buy your apartment, so it's more like condos.
Okay.
But The board read the script, and they did not want the movie filmed using the building. The interiors are all shot on a set that's constructed. Which, it's kind of funny, because I noticed for the first time watching this movie... I've seen it multiple times, but this was the first time I noticed that the makeup of the apartment doesn't really make sense.
Hmm.
As you watch the movie, like, there are doors that should not go to certain rooms further in the movie. So, like, maybe it's a reflection of her mental state of, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's that impossible space, like, you know, where... Yeah. And that was another interesting thing, because we ended up watching the movie together, and you said that you've seen this movie multiple times, but on each viewing, you notice something different, or you notice, like, a new thing.
Yeah, specifically during scenes where Rosemary is dreaming or is drugged.
Yeah.
The dream sequences in this are fantastic. And I think that's 100% because Polanski is the person directing it.
Yeah, and I was amazed that, like, there was full frontal nudity. And
yeah, in the 60s? In the 60s, that was not something that was done in America. That was kind of...
Very risque.
Very risque at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Polanski's a European director, so he had a little bit more loose guidelines as in terms of, like, what was and was not appropriate at the time in America.
Because we were talking about the rating of this particular movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was R. Like, at this point, the MPAA had come out, and it was a full hard R.
R, yeah.
A couple other tidbits about the movie. When Rosemary calls Baumgart, the actor that loses the part that Guy was up for, mm-hmm. and so Guy gets his part, the person on the other end of the line is an actor named Tony Curtis. He's the voice on the phone. Tony Curtis is a well-known actor. Like, he's Jamie Lee Curtis's mm-hmm. father.
Yeah.
So in that scene when they're... recording it, they rehearsed it with Polanski on the other line, and then when they actually shot it, the confusion on her face is real, because she was trying to recognize where she heard that voice from, because she was not expecting that, but because Polanski, I forget where he is, but he speaks with a very thick accent, so she's like, this is not Roman Polanski. So you know, that obviously did not happen. She was confused, and it got a really good reaction out of the actress.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to see scenes like that where the director doesn't give a full overview of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I guess the most prominent scene that comes to mind is from Aliens, when the chest burster pops out. Nobody on set knew what was going to happen, so all of those reactions are genuine,
like,
reactions.
Genuine, like, oh, he's not really dying, but this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though, on the flip side, you only get one shot at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have to reshoot it, well, everybody knows what's up, so...
Exactly.
You're not going to get that kind of reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, directors, like, all... There's a history of auteur directors being horrible monsters to their actors. Like, you know, Stanley Kubrick on this, we'll talk about in the Shining episode, which, spoilers, is going to be coming up in a few weeks. But he absolutely tortures his actors on the set. James Cameron is another one that's really bad. Roman Polanski messing with her by... telling her he would be on the line and not being on the line, like, that's minor.
Yeah.
Except in this movie.
Oh, yeah, there's that scene.
There's a scene when Rosemary is kind of addled. She's
not
pregnant.
Kind of addled. She's addled.
She's not drugged up. She's just, like, in a panicky, hysteric mental state.
Yeah, because no one is, believing her.
Yeah, And so she's supposed to wander into traffic in the state of confusion. My understanding is this was not a closed set. Those were real cars that were moving. Roman Polanski his response to this was to pat the pregnancy pad she was wearing and saying, no one would run down a pregnant lady. None of the crew wanted to walk into traffic and focus on this shot because it requires you to walk backwards and not look at anything but what's in shot.
Yeah.
The reason in the film quality changes in that section is that Roman Polanski was actually forced to film it because none of the crew wanted to do it. And so he was shooting that with a handheld camera, and then they just folied in some audio.
Yeah. It. And it's amazing, that scene, because you can look at everyone's face. And those are, I guess, genuine people out on the street looking at this random scene, and they're like, what's going on? Yeah, because
what they're seeing is a woman who looks very late-term pregnancy and walking in a street with a guy filming her.
Yeah,
it's like,
in the middle of traffic where, like, cars are honking.
Yeah, like, that's, so, you know, maybe,
And I'm guessing this is the days before, like, you had to sign a,
I mean, you were supposed press release. To, but...
Because I wonder if they went around and got, like, people to sign press release. Yeah, probably not.
No, they did not. they almost assuredly did not.
Yeah. So you're watching this movie, you're like, hey, that's me.
Yeah.
I was randomly walking on that street.
Yeah. Now, I guess 20 minutes in, after we're done with the history, because that's all the notes I have.
Yeah.
Unless you had anything else that you can't.
No, I mean, you covered pretty much everything that I wanted to cover.
Yeah.
About Polanski just being
a dick.
Yeah.
So I guess just very generally, the story of this movie is that a young couple looks at the hotel, or not the hotel, at the apartment.
At the apartment, yeah.
And wants to, Guy is an actor. He's a stage actor. He's landed some commercials. Rosemary is kind of a stay-at-home mom, as was the time.
Yeah, and they're married, and they're just trying to move on up, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they look at the apartment, and they decide that they'll take it. Now, this apartment obviously would have been very expensive, even in the 60s. So there's a lot of question of, like, did they give them a break on what it costs?
Right.
Or...
because the thing is, Guy is a struggling actor.
Yes.
Rosemary has this, like, I guess, line that she has memorized when people go, oh, what does Guy do?
Yeah.
She gives this very sterile...
Yeah, it's what my wife pointed out as, it's a line that she's had to repeat so many times that it's just an immediate explanation of what her husband does.
Yeah.
Is that he's probably coached her into saying.
Yeah, where he's done a stage play and a couple of commercials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
where
to
it's
kind of... Yeah.
Nothing too big. Like, he hasn't broken into any major theater play. He hasn't broken into TV or movies. It's just a commercial and a stage play.
Yeah. So they move into this unit, and their neighbors invite them over, and their neighbors are an elderly couple.
Yes.
That
a very eccentric neighbor. Or,
they're very strange.
Yeah. I mean, the clothes that they're wearing are very bright and, like, vibrant.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I guess, well, the, wife, what was her
Minnie.
Name? Minnie. Has this New York accent that's, like, stereotypic New York accent.
Very loud, very brassy and brash, and, yeah, so their neighbors, kind of take a liking to them, and you know, later on Rosemary meets a lodger that's staying with this couple in the laundry room in the basement of the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of strikes up a like friendly conversation with her. Not too long after, Rosemary and Guy are coming back from some date or whatever, and
right. So the roommate who's living with Minnie and the husband, she's sort of like a vagabond, kind of. She was living on the streets.
Yeah, they took her in.
They took her in, and they fed her, and they kind of clothed her, and They even gave her this weird good luck charm, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Which was this herb in a basically a metal
sphere.
Here. Yeah. And they were saying, oh, it's good luck. It'll keep like.
Tannis root,
yeah. And it'll keep, you know, it'll keep bad things away from you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're coming back from a date, and this lodger has killed herself by jumping out of a window, and her dead body's on the car or on the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
This is really like the first time I think they actually meet the Castevets, right?
No, they
met her briefly in the mini in the hall.
Yeah, and Guy was not a fan. He was like, these are a bunch of old people who are going to, like, come and bother us for, like, milk or sugar or something like that.
By the way, Guy's, like, even before what he does, he's an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like, your typical chauvinist guy where...
Trash bag.
Yeah, where he's basically telling Rosemary, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that, like, don't hang out with those old people, I don't want to be part of that, like, scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The couple invites them to dinner.
Yeah, which is strange after, like, somebody who, you know, you were taking care of kills themselves, and then you're like, well, that was sad. You guys want to come and get some dinner with us?
Yeah. So you know, a few nights later, they go over to the Castevets, get them, get more acquainted with them.
Yeah, and you sort of see the interior of their apartment.
Yeah.
Which I thought was super interesting when Rosemary points out, like, oh, they don't have any sort of, like, paintings or pictures up. Like, they took... And you even noticed, like, oh, there are basically spots on their walls that are clear, that doesn't have any dust on it, where you can see...
Like an outline.
Yeah.
Where a painting was.
Where a painting was and things like that. So it kind of drops some hints, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as the movie progresses, Rosemary and Guy are having a date night, and Minnie delivers them a dessert.
After the after they have dinner, Guy starts talking with Minnie's husband, Roman.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh man, Roman has all these like cool stories. I think I'm going to start hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And then Rosemary was like, well, you said that you didn't like these old people. Like, you didn't want to hang out because you didn't want to be part of this old people group. He's like, I've changed my mind. Which is a very sudden change of mind.
Yeah, it's a very sudden change of mind. Once he starts doing that...
Yeah, so he starts hanging out with them more and more often. Yeah. And he invites, you know, Rosemary, like, hey, I'm going to hang out with Roman, because he's got a bunch of cool stories. And she's like, oh, well, you go. I'm going to work on, like, the drapes. Because she was, like, setting up the drapes and, you know, making their home look like a home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then they decide that they're going to have, like, a date night. And they sort of start, like, I don't know, talking about the old couple, where Rosemary is like, well, you're spending a lot of time with them.
Like, a weirdly large amount of time.
Yeah, and then Guy's like, oh, don't worry about it. You're just, it's fine. I really like them. He's got cool stories.
Yeah, so... she hears Minnie knock at the door, and the look on her face, she even says, please don't invite them in, please don't invite them in. And you can hear him having this loud conversation with her where he invites her in.
Yeah.
And Rosemary's like, no.
Yeah. Because they're spending so much time with these folks.
Yeah.
She's like, I just want a night by myself with my husband.
Yeah.
A nice date night.
But
Minnie's like, no, I don't want to come in. I'm just dropping off some dessert for you guys.
Yeah. So Guy then comes back in with some dessert, chocolate, what Minnie calls mouses, but it's moose.
Yeah.
And you know, mimics her accent, like, mocks her accent. It's like, oh, I just threw it in the bag, blah, 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 right? And so they start eating it, and Guy is just wolfing this down, and Rosemary's like, this tastes bitter and weird. I don't like it. And he gets angry at her for not eating the dessert.
Yeah, and this is the start, well, not the start, but this is, like, escalating the gaslighting, where he's like, oh, well, don't eat it if you don't like it.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, we're going to fight over dessert. He's like, I'm not fighting over dessert. Where clearly he's fighting over dessert.
Yeah, and I mean, this is on a night where they're, like, they've decided to try and start a family.
Yeah.
So this is supposed to be, like, a special sweet night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Rosemary eats, well, takes a couple of bites of it, but then spits most of it in her napkin.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, you know, I really don't like this. And he's like, well, Minnie spent a lot of hard time making this. You should at least eat it for her.
Well, she's not there. Like, yeah. Like his argument is just so ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the start, or, well, it's not the start, but I feel like it's the big
it's
part of...
It's when he starts gaslighting her, mm-hmm. and making her feel like she's crazy, or less than for not wanting to go through with something.
Yeah. And even she gives him, like, a little bit of a, I think of a, like, an elbow when she's like, oh, look at it. I ate it all. Don't I deserve a gold star? And he's like, ah, yeah, you did good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
again, yeah, she threw most of it out in her napkin.
Yeah. So it turns out that the reason it was bitter, probably, is because they were trying to knock her out. Because she is kind of in a dream state that I don't think she would be in if she ate the entire dessert.
Yeah.
It's because she spit most of it out that she's kind of cognizant, but she's still unaware of where she is.
She has those, like, elusive dreams.
Yeah. Where... So, like, she wakes up naked on a boat, and then she's in a bathing suit, and then she's...
surrounded by old people on
this
boat.
Who are naked.
Yeah.
And circling her and chanting and playing weird music, and then they take her below deck, quote-unquote, because of the storm coming, and this is when, you know, again, trigger warning, she is assaulted by not a human.
By the devil.
By the devil.
And it's, you don't see it, like, yeah. They don't physically show you, but you
they
do...
They show hands on her naked torso that cut her.
And you see, like...
the eyes.
Yeah, a flash of, like, a devil's face.
Yeah.
A couple of times. You do actually see Guy when she's, like, lucid dreaming. She does see Guy for a little bit. And for what it's worth, he does seem concerned.
Well, he should be. He just sold his wife into being assaulted by the devil... to bury his seed.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he's there watching all of that.
Yeah, and like, because Guy does express concern to Minnie, and she's like, did she eat all the dessert? Because if she ate all the dessert, she's not going to see a thing.
Yeah.
Like, she's fine. So the next morning, Rosemary wakes up and notices these cuts on her torso and her arms and stuff, and Guy makes some joke about... trimming his nails, don't worry, whatever.
Yeah.
Implying to her, or trying to convince her, that he just went ahead because they're trying to make a baby and she was ovulating, that even though she was unconscious, he just went ahead and had sex with her.
Which is horrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a thing as marital rape. I don't know if marital rape was on the laws as a crime at this point in America yet, but that's still... rape. It's still not good.
And of course she is, like, appalled because she's like, well, I was asleep and I passed out.
Don't do that next time.
Yeah, like, why did you do that? There was no consent there.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, and he tries to play it off, and again, this is nothing but gaslighting, where he's like, oh, well, we're trying to have a baby and you're ovulating, like, what did you want me to do?
I don't know, wait?
Yeah.
Till next month? Like...
wait till next month, maybe?
Yeah,
and like, he plays this off as, like, you know, oh, why are you so angry with me? I'm just doing what you wanted us to do.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, the whole scene is very... Which, I mean, it should be uncomfortable. Like, it's shot in a way that makes you nauseated.
Yeah. And it's, you know, with film, you're trying to get your audience to feel something.
Right.
Be it good feelings or be it bad feelings. And I will say, watching that scene for the first time really, like, disturbed me in a way that
gives you the bad feelings.
Yeah, exactly, because this scene was just so well done, so interesting in, like, the visual effects that they had.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of symbology in it.
Yeah,
with, like, the boat, because I know that your wife was talking a little bit about, like, the Kennedys, you know, having these wild parties on, like,
yeah, that would have still been in the public consciousness, because this is 68, so
yeah.
It's 5 years after Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So...
Because there's actually a lookalike actor that plays John Kennedy.
Yeah.
So...
So it's just... It's very intriguing, but, like, disturbing at the same time, and as a viewer of this, it really did invoke emotion in me, which
yeah.
is great for a movie...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of invoke.
It's very uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah. So it turns out that the devil's seed took root and
yes.
Rosemary's pregnant. And I
so at first she starts going towards her doctor. Like her
right.
Yeah, her pregnancy doctor who's like, "Oh, well you need to start taking these pills and you need bed rest and take these vitamins and things along those lines."
Yeah. And then the Castevets, I think, hook her up with the number one OBGYN, in New York,
yeah.
Dr. Saperstein, which, Saperstein. Funny note, if you watch, I think that there's a Dr. Saperstein character referenced, not like, you never see him, but he's referenced in, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh!
Like, Saperstein gets inserted into movies with the devil or, like, an occult element.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a tip of the hat to...
Well, there's funny things because, yeah, you pointed out a couple of other things that were like, oh, well, this is referenced in a lot of occult movies and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Guy starts getting callbacks.
Yeah, so
So he's an understudy for this one famous...
Baumgart.
Yeah. Actor. And apparently Baumgart gets stricken by blindness.
Yeah,
he just wakes up and he's like, can't see anymore.
And he's blind.
So he gets the leading role in this play.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets elevated to the stardom.
Yeah. So he starts doing well. Her pregnancy continues along, and Minnie starts making her, like, protein shakes, like, filled with vitamins and stuff for the baby, quote-unquote.
Yeah, and again, another gaslighting. She's like, oh, well, pills sit on shelves forever. I'm making you fresh things.
Yeah, it's fresh stuff. So it yeah. seems nice at first, except the entire time she's pregnant, up till this point, she's just in a lot of abdominal pain, which...
And she's losing weight.
Yes, she is not gaining. She's not really showing.
Yeah.
And
I will say this actress, I remember you told me that she was stricken with a disease, the actress.
She had polio.
Polio. And that's why she's so skinny.
Yeah, she's very skinny.
What's the actress's name?
Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow, yeah. And, I mean... She is very skinny, and the makeup is fantastic because they make her even more pale.
Yeah. Make it look like her eyes are sunken in with, you know, bags under her
mm-hmm.
eyes and stuff like that.
And at the beginning of the movie, she's wearing a lot of colors. Like, she's wearing sundresses
yeah.
that are yellow and vibrant colors. Now she starts wearing, like, these pale blues and... These, like, darker,
Yeah,
which I think is fantastic, like, matching her outfits with what she's going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, Sorry.
Oh, yeah. So she throws this party with a bunch of their friends, and she puts her foot down because Guy, obviously, he's been spending a lot of time with the old people next door.
Yeah.
And she goes, nope, no one over 60. Like, that's what you have to do to get into this party.
Yes. I will say, before that, she also gets a haircut, too, to sort of, like, match her persona. She gets this very short, like, bob haircut.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's Vidal Sassoon's, like, trademark haircut. Like,
yeah.
He's, yeah.
She even enters in the room.
It's Vidal Sassoon.
Vidal Sassoon, yeah. And I think Guy is kind of appalled at it.
Yeah, he really does not like it.
Because she looks more tomboyish than anything else.
Yeah, it's a, if you've never seen it, Google a picture of Vidal Sassoon haircuts.
Yeah.
They were very popular, very, I guess, controversial. People were put out that women were cutting their hair short.
Yeah. Yeah, because the first response is he's like, oh, well, at least they'll grow back. It's like, man, you Which, are a...
as a married man, don't ever say that. Just saying, that's not something that a good person will say.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to touch on that before the party. But yeah, she has a party with all of her friends. And
some of whom have had kids at this point, and who are commenting on, well, you're not really showing...
Yeah, she has a sister, doesn't she?
Is her sister there?
Yeah, her sister's
there
her sister at the party.
Is there. Okay.
Who's had multiple kids, and she was the one who went to her original doctor.
Yeah.
And who, you know, said, oh.
Oh, that's right. I always forget that. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was like, that's not right. You should be gaining.
You should be gaining weight. You shouldn't have pains all the time.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, and I'm having this, like, weird hunger for raw meat.
Yeah.
And which is kind of a, like a weird nod of like, you've got the devil in your belly.
Yeah.
It needs raw meat. And yeah, her sister's like, oh, that's really strange. Like, I've had 3 kids. This isn't normal.
That's not normal. So Dr. Saperstein,
at the end of the party, like, Guy goes on this, like, this tangent of like, oh, look at what your friends did. They destroyed our apartment because they left a mess. And it's kind of funny because as we were watching it, people are smoking. And I guess this is just back in the 60s where, like, when you're done with your cigarette, you put it out on somebody's floor.
Yeah, I like, because I commented to you while watching it that it's like, you know, you can't find it. Like, I'm sure there were ashtrays, like, but there's all these stamped out cigarette butts on this hardwood floor. And it's like...
Yeah.
I would be pissed if I had a party and someone just stamped out a cigarette on my floor. Like, that's a sign of disrespect, right? Like, that's not... that's
I
saying your
just...
place is a garbage heap.
Yeah. The 60s, I guess. Don't know, yeah. But yeah, so he starts throwing this, like, fit of, like, oh, your friends are so rowdy, they locked me out, and they're telling you all this stuff.
Yeah, he calls them a bunch of bitches.
Yeah. And he's basically saying, like, you shouldn't listen to them. You need to be listening to Minnie and Romaine.
Yeah, Roman.
Roman,
and,
sorry,
and,
Roman.
Dr. Saperstein, because she starts talking about wanting to see another doctor. He convinces her to see Saperstein again.
Again, just gaslighting her, like, telling her to stay away from her friends.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of cults do that, where, like, when you sign up for a cult, they're like, don't talk to your family.
Don't talk to anyone.
Don't talk to your friends. And that's basically what the new doctor says. He's like, don't pick up any of those pregnancy books. They don't know what they're talking about. Don't talk to your friends. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, and when she goes back, she's talking about the pain in her abdomen, mm-hmm. and... She makes the comment, like, I think it's an ectopic pregnancy or whatever. And he's like, where did you hear that? Like, he reprimands her for, like, looking into why she might be feeling pain.
Yeah. And again, he does the whole thing of, like, women shouldn't be reading sort of deal. It's like,
And then he sends her home. Her pains stop after she stops drinking the protein things that Minnie keeps giving her, which she just pours down the drain.
Yeah. She starts, you know, feeling a little bit better because she thinks that she's losing the baby.
Yeah.
She thinks that all the pain is basically meaning that she is losing the kid.
Right,
Yeah. Why?
Like, she still doesn't know what's going on with the whole, you know, occult thing. She just thinks, I'm losing this kid.
Yeah.
So, I guess time progresses and you see she's actually showing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she ends up talking with her good friend.
Oh, Hutch. Yeah. Hutch is their former landlord that she was friends with because she was home all day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's suspicious about all these pains. He's suspicious of the Castevets.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to meet up with him, runs into Minnie instead. Hutch never shows.
Well, at first, you know, she starts talking to him about what's in these drinks. And she references...
Oh, Tannis Root.
Tannis Root.
And he's like oh. It's like a moss? Like, because he's looking at the necklace, too.
Yeah. And he's like,
it doesn't look like a root. It looks like moss.
Yeah. And he even mentions, like, oh, well, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
And as he's mentioning that, Guy's coming in. And Guy's like, oh, okay, well, let me get your coat. So he goes and gets his coat.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, I'll look this up and I'll talk to you later.
Except that Hutch is missing a glove that was in his coat.
Yeah.
So
he ends up looking it up and finding out this book. And he's like, oh, well, I need to, and then he reaches out to Rosemary and says, we need to talk.
Yeah. So she's supposed to meet up with him, runs into Minnie instead. Hutch never showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so Minnie hails a cab in a very New York way. And then, you know, takes her back to their apartment. Rosemary doesn't get the book until after it comes out that Hutch has died.
Yes.
And
he ended up going into a coma.
Yeah.
That, like, she was talking to him, and he was acting normally. He was like, I'm going to meet you tomorrow in front of,
the Time Life Building.
Time Life Building. I need to give you something. Next day, in a coma. And she's like, wow, like,
and
she even remarks, like, I talked to him yesterday, he was okay, now he is in a coma.
Yeah, and so he passes away.
Yeah, he never gets out of that coma, he passes.
Yeah, and after he dies, he comes up once that the lady who gives her the book tells her that he wanted to give you this. He thought it was the day that you guys were supposed to meet when he came out of the coma briefly and then died.
Yeah.
So Rosemary starts reading this book and comes across...
So what was the book's name?
All of Them Witches.
All of Them Witches, which you told me is a band.
Yeah.
So there's a band out there called...
All Them Witches.
All Them Witches.
It's a southern metal band. Yeah, it's really cool. to change the phrase up like that, that's really cool. Instead of All of Them Witches, All Them Witches.
All Them Witches. So, yeah, it's a book of just about the occult and witches. And he has highlighted a part saying that Tannis Root is actually, like, the devil's weed or something.
Yeah, it's not a real thing, I don't think.
Yeah, it
it's something they made up. But, yeah, like, it's associated with, like, Satan.
Yeah.
Because if you reverse Tannis, it's Satan.
Ah!
Unscramble the words. Apparently, yeah. Satanists are interested in scrambling up letters because Roman Castevet is a scrambled up word name for Adrian Marcato, who was the son of one of the guys who was in the building they're in. They never call it the Dakota.
Yeah. And there were some, like, occult things where a baby was killed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was a newborn baby found in the furnace room, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, a bunch of weird occult shit. Adrian Marcato's father was killed in the lobby of this place by a mob, apparently.
Yeah.
So, she's reading that. She finds a picture of Adrian Marcato's father, and surprise, surprise, it's a picture of Roman Castevet.
Yeah.
Just in different, like...
Clothes,
different facial hair, like, just to show, like, yeah, no, this is beyond a shadow of a doubt, his father.
Yeah.
And so, after that, she wants to cut off contact.
Yeah, well, she starts buying other books about the occult.
Yeah.
About witches, and starts reading, and Guy's basically super upset with her about reading this stuff, mm-hmm. and puts the book, the All of Them Witches, on, like, a high shelf so she can't reach it, which is, like, super a dick move.
And then it comes out later in an argument when she's looking for it to show him something. He goes, oh, yeah, I threw it out in the trash. It's like, she was close friends with this man. It's the only, like, she even says, it's the only thing I have from Hutch.
Yeah.
Like,
why'd you throw it away? Yeah.
Like,
and he's like, well, I'm a man, so I get to do what I want. It's my house.
Yeah, he basically makes the argument that all this reading was doing no good for her small woman brain.
Yeah.
Like, that's the summation of his argument. I forget what he says exactly, but yeah. He's just a walking trash pile.
So she gets this idea that they are all witches, and they're trying to steal her newborn baby. They do, like, occult things with it.
Right.
Yeah. So she ends up deciding, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
And she actually goes back to her original doctor, and she's like, I don't know what's happening. This is when she goes to the phone booth.
Yeah. Because she's trying to get back in with her original doctor that her sister, her friend took, gave her an introduction to,
mm-hmm.
who she left at Minnie and Roman's beck to go see Dr. Saperstein. So her original doctor, she kind of just shows up in the office, all sweaty looking, because it's in the middle of summer in New York, it's very hot. None of the buildings probably had air conditioning other than his office, it looks like. And even then, she tells him all of this crazy sounding stuff. Like, if you were a person working as a doctor, and this pregnant lady who stops seeing you comes in and starts telling you that there's a cult next door and they're trying to steal your baby and they're poisoning your drinks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I left your practice to go to the number one OBGYN in New York. Because she even mentions, I started seeing Dr. Saperstein. Yeah. It's like,
oh, he's a colleague.
Like, he's a colleague. Like, he's
one of the best.
He's one of the best. Like, he puts her in his office and turns on the air and says, here, why don't you lie down on the couch?
Yeah.
As soon as the working day's out, we'll get some help or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so she takes a nap. And when she wakes up, Guy and Dr. Saperstein and some other dude are there to pick her up.
Yeah.
And take her against her will, because, like...
And I believe they even have to sedate her, like...
They have to sedate her to get her in the car, even. Mm-hmm. My wife pointed out, like, one of two things is going on. I always thought it was him reacting, the doctor she goes to for help, being like, oh, she is crazy, she needs to speak with this guy who's a better doctor. My wife pointed out, I believe that she is of the opinion, or she just floated the idea of, maybe that doctor's in on it, too.
It could be.
Because he's Dr. Saperstein's colleague.
Yeah.
Like, is he in on it?
And like, it seems like a lot of, like, the elite... kind of, or in on it a little bit.
Yeah, like, the really cool thing of this film is that there's this level of paranoia around it of, like, is this person in on it?
Yeah.
Is that person in on it? Like,
who
what's
knows?
Going on? Yeah. Is the guy who showed them the apartment in on it?
Yeah. Like, you just don't know, yeah.
I actually think he is in on it. I think you see him.
No. I know the doorman is in on it. He has no idea.
Yeah. they take her back. She delivers the baby in the apartment.
Yeah, where, you know, she's hysteric because she wants to go to a doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, also, she's worried a little bit about Minnie and Ramon. But they...
Oh, Roman, yeah.
Roman. I keep on missing up his name.
Roman is
but then
says that he's sick, and he wants to travel and see his places around the world. Dr. Saperstein lets her know that, he also is a doctor for Roman, and, oh, by the way, he wouldn't want you to know this, but he's dying. You know what doctors typically don't do is share their patients' information with random people that they're treating for something else. That's something that doctors, I don't think, ever have done.
Yeah. So,
or been able to do legally.
She was, like, a little okay, like, oh, so these people aren't going to be around, so they can't steal my baby or something like that. But, again, it was another ruse because they didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she ends up delivering the baby.
Yep.
Under heavy sedation.
Yeah. Guy comes to her with some story when she comes out of it slightly that she lost the baby. It's okay, though. We can try another. Like, his reaction to it is so nonchalant because, like, again, spoilers, he's not a very good actor. Guy, I mean. I think Cassavetes does a great job.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. But the character Guy is not a good actor.
Because, his reaction is just like, oh, don't worry, you lost the baby, but we can have another one or whatever.
And yeah,
like,
in the same breath.
That's not, like, the right reaction. Like, maybe he's not a shitty actor, he's just a shitty husband and a shitty dude.
Yeah, where, like, he should be crying and being like, oh, I'm so sorry that you...
Yeah, comforting her rather than saying, eh, it's okay, we can just get another one.
Yeah, and again, all of the people in the old person's group, like, that hang around with Minnie and everybody, are helping her out. Like, one of the older ladies is giving her food in bed because she has to be bedridden for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So she lost the baby and she's like totally depressed.
She's confined to bed rest by Dr. Saperstein.
Yeah. And they are heavily medicating her too.
Yeah.
So they give her food, they give her medicine, and then she has to start pumping.
Yeah, they
for milk.
Basically make her start pumping for the milk, and they take it away, and
she starts figuring out, she's like, why do I need to do this?
Well, I would assume that she would need, like, medically need to, but, like, what triggers her suspicion, I think, is because she starts tonguing her pills and, like, hiding them in a crack in the bed frame.
Yeah.
She is starting to wake up, and like you said, is like, why are they taking this away? So she, like, finishes eating soup or something and goes to put the dirty dish, like, in the milk that she just pumped.
Yeah.
And the lady freaks out, and she's like, oh, no, don't do that, you're going to dirty it. And she's like, what does it matter? You're dumping this, right?
Yeah. And then she, like, tries to play off, like, oh, no, you know.
It's dirty.
Yeah, don't mix up the dishes. And another thing is, since their room is right connected to
living room, I guess, of the Castevets.
Yeah, she starts hearing baby cries.
Yeah.
And she starts getting very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess sort of the end of the movie, she goes to this one... does she lock out Guy? She ends up, like, locking out Guy.
Yeah, she locks him out of the apartment.
No. Maybe it's while he's gone, she ends up going to this closet, this linen closet,
mm-hmm.
which used to have a door that connected the two apartments.
Yeah. So she goes in through there, and she sees this large gathering of people. There's, a racist stereotype of an Asian person taking pictures everywhere in there. But all these people have converged on the Castevets apartment, and oh, by the way, the Castevets are back.
Yeah.
Because really Roman was never sick.
Yeah.
It was just a ruse. And they have her baby there.
Yeah. In a black crib with
a Batmobile. Like a mobile, or a mobile.
Yeah.
Or a baby mobile. With, like, bats and shit.
No,
on
not
it.
Bats. It had an upside down cross.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's an upside down cross.
Yeah. And everybody's, like, super surprised that they see her because she grabbed a kitchen knife, so she's brandishing a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just ready to, like, stab some folks.
Yeah. So Roman calms her down and starts, you know, basically saying, look, like, we have this baby now.
Yeah.
You can be a mother to it.
Well, before that, a guy sort of, like, tries to explain his part of his, like, his view. He was like, oh, you know, these people promised me great fame and fortune, and I was just going to, you know, have you pretend that you lost the baby, and you would never thought about it, and then we could move to, like, L.A. and actually had a family together.
Yeah.
And he's, like, trying to justify himself. And you can see in his eyes, and again, this is great acting, that he's, like, he doesn't even believe it. Like, he's trying to convince himself.
Yeah, it sounds like he's trying to convince himself.
Yeah.
Rather than her. Because I think at this because point, he basically, she's done with him.
Yeah, he sold her for a devil baby for yeah. great fame and fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Which is insane.
Thoroughly insane. Yeah, yeah, like, if someone told me they could give me great fame, but I had to sell out my wife, I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
No, like, that's a suspicious statement, one, but no. Yeah.
And, like, you know, oh, my wife has to get raped by the devil?
Yeah, that's not, yeah, no. No, no, no. But yeah,
oof.
So he convinces her to be a mother to the child because... He even comments, like, all the women in this group are, like, way too old.
Yeah, they're all
like,
60s.
They're all in their 60s and 70s. Like, it'd be great if you actually were a mother to your son. Like, so
the devil needs a mother.
Yeah, so she agrees, and that's where she starts singing the baby a lullaby. Someone comments that he has his father's eyes, which we saw earlier, these, like, sickly yellow color.
Yeah, like a snake. Well, like yeah. a serpent.
Well, the devil has that, so yeah. presumably the baby has the similar eyes.
I guess more like a cat eye. It's more like a crescent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the movie ends with Rosemary being a mother to her son and rocking him to sleep while singing a lullaby.
Who's the son of Satan.
Who's
yeah.
the Antichrist. Yeah. And that's where this bummer of a movie drops off. It's
yeah.
beautiful.
Ooh, boy.
This movie is terrifying. There are parts of it that are thoroughly disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that whole scene when she's drugged and yeah. taken down is probably the most...
horrific?
Horrific, yeah, yeah. Scene to watch. But it's also really hard to watch all of this, like, gaslighting. This, like, basically telling her... Oh, your opinion doesn't matter because you're a woman.
Yeah, like, I was, you know, when coming up with the subtitle to this episode, I landed on the year as one because that's what Roman starts yelling and everyone starts chanting and cheering out with the son of Satan being on the earth now.
Yeah, because
but
when Jesus was on earth, it was year one. Yeah,
yeah.
AC/DC. No,
A-D-C.
I was thinking of AC/DC, the band.
But yeah, like, when I was doing the subtitle for this, I really wanted to say Gaslight, the movie.
Sure.
But there is a movie called Gaslight. That's where the term gaslighting comes from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, no, this movie is horrific.
But well-directed, well...
Yeah.
Like... The cinematography is fantastic. The acting is fantastic.
It's terrific in the true usage of that word. Like, it is inspiring of terror.
Yeah.
And
I can see why it is the, you know...
I can see why it's preserved in the film registry.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
It's,
yeah. It's a good movie, but it makes you feel terrible.
Yeah, despite the fact that terrible people worked on it,
yeah.
And the subject matter is rough.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes art comes from a rough place and comments on rough ideas.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that this movie relies so heavily on gaslighting, that I think it brings more attention to, hey, ladies, watch out, your husband is... maybe a big piece of shit. Like, maybe the movie isn't trying to convey the idea that your husband's selling you into Satan's sex army, but, like, but like I do think that a reason why this movie was well attended by women,
yeah,
primarily, is that, like, it brings up the commentary that, hey, don't let your man be a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Don't let your boyfriend or your husband trick you into believing things that aren't true.
Yeah. And, you know, don't let people tell you not to learn or read or, like,
yeah,
try to find help for yourself.
Yeah, like, even...
Because a lot of people who are in abusive relationships, the person who's abusing them will try to gaslight them, will try to be like, hey, you have it great, when really you have it horrible, and that they're abusing you, and that's not a form of love.
Yeah, it's abuser's tactics to do things like that. It's, even pulling the horror elements out of this movie, there's good commentary to be had in this movie.
Like, yeah.
It's multi-level.
Which makes it a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend watching this movie if you're not churned off by some of these,
the rougher stuff in there.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm just to comment on Polanski's issues, I think it would be great because the argument comes out because I know there are people, like, I know people that refuse to watch this movie and have never seen it, specifically because of Polanski. And there's always a contention of people that make the argument that, well, you know, you need to separate the artist from the art and whatever. And it's like, okay, I feel like I would, because, you know, I bought this movie from a used bookstore.
Yeah.
So Paramount didn't see any of my money for royalties for this, even though I own this movie. I didn't steal it. I feel like if you're going to make that argument, though, about separating the artist from the art, is whenever you have someone in a position of power like Polanski or a Weinstein or a Louis C.K., any of these pieces of shit, maybe the work that they're responsible for, if it's so much an art, maybe it should be public domain.
Yeah.
That way they don't see any financial benefit, any reward from it other than this horrible piece of shit made this thing, but everyone can appreciate it. Look at it.
Look at the art. Look at,
that went into it.
Went into it. And I think that's a fantastic idea of making these things public domain, making them free to the public, where you can appreciate it for what it is, but those people don't get any sort of monetary value on that.
Yeah, because I think
that's
also
a great idea.
Yeah, like, because I agree with, I mean, that'll never happen.
But, yeah, I mean, but like, in a perfect society.
Yeah, there's no way that Paramount's going to say, oh, yeah, we'll just give everyone the use of Rosemary's Baby, because it is a cultural touchstone. But, you know, like, I also fall into the camp of I don't want to reward people for their bad behavior.
Yeah.
Even though I want to see this thing. So, like, that's why I picked this up in a used bookstore. Mm-hmm. Like, because they don't see anything from it. So, like, I get that impulse, but I also want to be able to appreciate it. So, like, there are ways you can do it. I recommend maybe not renting this, but I think it is worth buying because there's so much stuff going on that you can watch this movie 10 times a day for a year and you'll pick up something different each viewing.
Like, I wouldn't go 10 times.
Well, not 10 times a day for a year, but like, especially the dream sequences that are fantastically shot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references in this movie. There's a lot of things that are hidden and you don't notice necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. And, was glad that I was able to watch it with you because you did point out a couple of things that I would have missed.
Yeah.
Because when you see their apartment after Rosemary goes in there looking for her baby, you actually see all of the artwork that's up there.
Yeah.
And you can see a lot of different, like, symbolism in that artwork with, like, the occult and strange things along those lines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are a lot of, like, little details that you miss on your first viewing that you can always catch on newer viewings. But, yeah, I do recommend this, I will also say maybe try finding it at a used bookstore or, like, at a thrift store. Thrift stores.
Yeah, thrift store. If you buy it new or check it out from Amazon or rent it, or check it out from the library, like, it does benefit the people who still hold the rights to this. I don't know if Polanski sees any, because I don't know enough about the contract law of the 1960s movie industry.
Exactly.
But I don't know if he still gets a percentage cut of it or whatever. But, yeah. But any way you can get this movie and see it and maybe not reward the people who made it, that might be a good idea, because I do think it is culturally significant, and the Library of Congress agrees.
Yeah, and it's definitely a interesting peek into that, I guess, time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that, both of us recommend it.
Yeah.
With that, I guess for a kind of a meta moment, our book club book is Warbreaker.
Warbreaker by Brandon Samerson.
Yes. It will probably go up the same week or maybe the next week.
Okay.
Depending, I forget what the release order is. This may go up with a me. I don't know. But we're definitely putting this up with another episode so that there is some variety if people did not want to listen to this.
Yeah, so people just don't miss out on a week.
Yeah, and the other thing is the first weekend in April, we will be at 221BCon, your source for all things Sherlock and Sherlock adjacent.
We are looking forward to that.
I'm super stoked to be going. I really can't wait to go back again and maybe run into some of the people that we met there.
Exactly, or even run into some of the listeners.
If you're there, just wave hello to us.
Feel free to take a picture or two. I know I might be dressed up. Who knows?
Yeah. You usually like cosplaying. Yeah. I don't. I'll just be in, like, a t-shirt and shorts, probably. Hopefully. I'm looking forward to seeing friends from other cons that I volunteered at.
But, yep.
Yeah, we will be back at 221BCon. It's the first weekend in April. I think it's the 5th through the 7th.
Yep.
But, we'll be there, so look out for that convention coverage around then.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next main show topic will be Jumanji.
Jumanji.
Welcome to the Jungle.
That's right.
The
newest of the Jumanjis.
Exactly. So, we'll be talking about that next main show. There'll probably be a me between this and the next one. And then there's the Warbreaker book club. So, bone up on your Warbreaker, and we'll talk about that, I think, next week. Or maybe this week.
All right, guys.
All right.
Well, as always, stay
stay frosty, stay golden, pony boy. What?
I guess.
Stay golden, pony boys. Bye.
See ya.